First, I want to thank CapitaLink for arranging this panel and for having all of us. We are going to discuss a very interesting topic today with three very distinguished panelists. First, I want to introduce myself. I'm Guan Jian. I'm a partner of Fortune Farley & Williams Hong Kong office. Today with us, we have Mr. Pankaj Khanna. He's the CEO of the very successful pool manager named Haima Incorporation. Okay. And then we have Mr. Stephen Shao. Stephen Shao is the managing partner of Equator Fund. And then we also have Mr. Kenneth Lam. He's the founder and CEO of C Capital. Today our topic will be about investing in shipping. And we are going to explore and discuss three very interesting, I would say, structure. One is joint venture. The second is merger and acquisition. The third is more general. It's the other industry consolidation. And first, I want to maybe raise a general question to the three panelists here. What key trends do you see driving the investment in shipping today, particularly regarding joint ventures, merger acquisitions, and other industry consolidations? And how do these trends influence your organization's strategy in funding and also in investment? Maybe we go with you first.
Yeah, so look, I'm from my own standpoint, Heidmar is a services company. We do technical management and also commercial management. I took over this company with a management buyout about 4 years ago, and we have mostly had some organic growth, but then I did a M&A transaction with the Capital Group and increased my fleet and doubled it at the start of 2022, which was a critical time. Timing was great. So we went from 30 ships to 60 vessels. That drove further growth in Heidmar. So we went from 30 to 60. We took delivery of over 100 ships in the last in 22 and 23. So it's been M&A allowed us to build out the platform. Recently, we also acquired a small technical manager based out of Hong Kong. So M&A has been a critical part of our growth strategy. We are about to list on NASDAQ. We are at the final stages of listing. We're doing a reverse merger. We expect by the end of the year, maybe early next year, we are listed. And that will drive further growth. So M&A has been a key tool in terms of driving growth for Heidmar and will remain one of the key tools as well. Especially on the services side, scale is important. This is one of the reasons for growth. It's not growth for growth's sake, but we need scale both on the technical side and on the commercial side. So that's driving our push for M&A. Organically, it takes a very long time to do it. And why scale? Because we have our customers asking us for solutions on decarbonization, asking us solutions on the technical side, which require bigger organizations, require efforts in terms of finding bespoke solutions for decarbonization. So you cannot do that with small organizations.
Thank you. Thank you. Stephen, please.
Well, yeah, good morning. Thank you for your patience with us because it's approaching lunchtime, so I will try to make it quick. So, well, Equator Fund actually is, based in Shenzhen, the other city, crossing the border. So we are managing the industry policy funds representing Shenzhen city government. But we, by nature, is a PE fund, so we are open for LOPs, from the resources from the, maritime, ecosystems, any partners, something. So while we view this world, there are certain, major trendy things, we are really concerned about. Number one, of course, is the it's an industry policy fund. The politics, actually, political, factor will come first. We need to think about, geopolitical, conflicts, we are very concerned about, you know, what's happening between China and USA, you know, and whether with especially when Donald Trump, you know, coming to board, you know, for the second term, you know, he, you know, we believe that he is going to be, you know, very continue with the, you know, extremely oppressive, you know, policy against China. And China, after 4 years and even 8 years, actually, after Donald Trump first term and, you know, Biden, you know, governments, I think China is quite well trained and stand up, you know. So the confrontation may be more severe, you know, as we see. So that will bring certain big uncertainty to the, you know, trading and, you know, shipping markets, you know, in tandem. The other thing is, of course, is well known is decarbonization. You know, it's, I think this morning we talked about a lot on this decarbonization. But decarbonization actually means what? Means cost. Means additional cost. Means, you know, additional investment for ship owners. Also as PE, as investors, you know. So we are concerned, you know, whether this is possible for us to recover this additional cost from the existing and future freight return. So, of course, you know, somebody, you know, we also think about whether we can, you know, invest in certain, you know, paper, you know, carbon trading paper. But unfortunately, we don't have that much instruments in international market. It's not consolidated. It's quite, you know, separated and disparated in the world. So we're still looking into this one. The other thing I think is new tech, you know, application to shipping industry. Luckily, we actually, the fund is, headquartered in Shenzhen, you know. Shenzhen, as you know, is a burgeoning in the technological, you know, and innovation, you know, base for China, even in the world. So we see a lot of new innovation technology. So whether this is possible for us to incubate some, you know, innovators, you know, and see how much, to what extent this kind of technology can be applied to, you know, shipping assets. Of course, at the cost is concerned, so must be very much cost efficient and effective something. So this is an area, a trend which also we are pay attention to. Last but not least, I think it's the currency issue, exchange issue. You know, we are concerned about the US dollars and RMB. You know, it's clear the RMB, there's we see the rise of RMB, you know, for shipping assets, but unfortunately RMB is not freely exchanged. But US dollar, you know, still very strong, but I think it's deep in our hearts, we understand US dollar is going to be weakened. If you look at yesterday, actually, we see the publication from US Federal Reserve. It's a national debt, US national debt is reached already, surpassed. I think $36 trillion US dollars. Bottom in our mind, we know the government will never pay back. Default, is that systematic default will be there. But that's why we need to balance whether how much we need balance from the short term and long term, medium term, how to you know, diversify of assets, shipping assets in denominated in different currencies. The other thing I think is rebounding currencies, I think the Hong Kong dollars maybe play a bit more role. Not so many discussions about this one, but from our perspectives, Hong Kong dollars, you know, success and you know, inefficiency actually attributed to its packing system with US dollars. Because if you have packing system, people go for US dollar, you know, assets. Why do I go? I choose Hong Kong based dollars. But suppose something happened in the future, you know, Hong Kong dollars can be overnight, you know, packing. And maybe Singapore dollar could be a very good, you know, example. I mean, dirty floating, you know, packing to a basket of currencies. Even that would be have more relevance to RMB, because RMB assets is not freely held by the shipping companies. So why don't we go for Hong Kong dollars if Hong Kong dollar can provide a very clear and you know, certain, you know, linkage with RMB, you know, something. Why not go for Hong Kong dollars? But of course I don't see Hong Kong is ready for that. So but hopefully we can see more in the future. Yeah, I think I said too much. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. Kenneth, please.
Yes, thanks for having me. So first of all, regarding investment, I'm seeing a lot of familiar faces, and most of you know that, you know, I have been a banker for 30 odd years, and I have moved to the bright side to become a owner with a ship owning and leasing company started last year. So wherever, whether wearing the hat as a banker or as an investor, in terms of investment decisions, actually, it's all going back to the fundamentals. Basic supply and demand. Why do you think that type of ship would have a future? You want to invest into the future. So these days that were probably, it's just not, you know, the market forces, but also regulatory forces, and the ESG definitely play a role. But ESG, decarbonization, it is not going to, it's not the first time, and it's not going to be last. So those are just factors, you know, going into our investment decisions. So basic fundamentals always prevail. So on the question regarding joint ventures, M&A, so again, back on the fundamentals, you know, shipping is a very capital intensive industry. So in accordance with the latest numbers, the world fleet is now about $2 trillion with $1.55 trillion underwater and $450 billion being built. And we all know that, you know, being shipping, the new wave of ordering owing to the new fuel technology hasn't really come yet, right? So driven by necessities, there's a need to combine the resources. Consolidation in the industries, you know, we see it time again, you know, with the container industries, you know, the first one that has been doing, you know, for years. Lately, we've also seen, say, the likes of Star Bulk, Eagle Bulk. And we see the Safaris family getting back to, you know, the control of Euronav. But also, you know, there are also the exercises such as the Oaktree divesting from Fleetscape to the overs. So those are quite, you know, different, you know, exercises, but also showing that, you know, market forces, you know, always prevail. And when people think that, you know, they need to divest, when people think that, you know, there is a way that they can make more synergy and can have a better business proposal by acquiring, they will continue to do so. With scale, I also agree, you know, with our speakers before that. One thing is that with scale, the ship owning side is becoming ever closer, you know, to the cargo side. This is a trend definitely definitely happening. The market also is, you know, you see actually less, you know, longer term employment contracts. It also it makes owners, you know, to be more compelled to make sure that, you know, they have the scale so they can work together with the cargo owners. Actually, on this front, so being in Hong Kong, maybe I got to sell this a little bit. So Hong Kong is the international shipping, finance, shipping and trade center. So for the longest time, Hong Kong, you know, being based, you know, here as owner, we know that, you know, by having the right stability measures, policies to create the legal, tax and regulatory stability, owners will come, and the rest of the maritime cluster will come. It's more the merits of maritime cluster, of course, you know, have the involve the finance side, you know, the management side, the ship management side, and all that. But lately, it is also, there's a firm emphasis that the trade side has to be closer and closer involved. In the last couple of days, you know, also with the ICS summit, you know, being held in Hong Kong, WTO is also a part of it. And we, you know, in this interesting, challenging world, I think as a force, you know, as an industry, I think we would have together continue to advocate a free market, advocate, you know, a market that we can understand, advocate a market that come up with the standards that we can all come up with, you know, including the new view, so that we can follow. And with this, I think we would have a chance, you know, of providing the sustainable capital into this very capital intensive industry. And to answer your questions, you know, all these M&A joint ventures are driven by all this necessity.
Thanks a lot. I think from my perspective, I also see that one of the elements, as you identify, Pankaj, that we see cooperation model of different players in the shipping market say, for example, managers, they used to just sign a management agreement with the ship owners, but now the managed service are more in certain structures that we do is embedded in the joint venture structure. So I think the relationship getting closer is also what, as a law firm, Watson Farley Williams, we have seen in the market. And I think in the discussion, all of you also identify certain, I would think, challenges in the shipping investments. So my next questions will be, in light of the, Stephen, you mentioned the geopolitical tension. You all mentioned about the, technological advancements, okay, also the regulatory changes. With all these in mind, what do you believe are the critical factors for a successful investment in shipping industry? Maybe Kenneth, we go with you first.
Well, I think successful the investment, we got to the look into, you know, why we are in shipping, you know, the So the if I made so for the Sea Capital, we basically the ship owning leasing company. We would do both finance leases and operating leases. I think our business model is flexible. We would always provide a layer of capital to make things work. So in finance lease, in short, you know, it could be it could be deemed as mezzanine layer, although we would own the assets. In operating leases, of course, that would be the equity. So we have to generate the return. And when we look at finance leases, I can just wear my banking hat, you know, in the old days and continue to do it and rely on the counterparty risk, you know, to mitigate, you know, the challenges that we might face. But one thing is, you know, in order to make sense, you know, of the investment, you have to provide the flexibility that we can also do operating leases. And in my case, in doing operating the leases, I would need a very good ship manager, ideally. But very lucky, you know, for us, we don't even have a good ship manager. We actually have a partner in the Seacon that is working with us. All of a sudden, we have a lot more confidence in the building up our operating fleets. I mean, i.e., you know, most of the contracts would be in the time charters, so that we can generate the yield that we want. You know, we are a yield play, plus hopefully equity the upside. You know, with the right management of risk. So we got to identify, you know, why we are in the shipping. You know, we provide capital to own ships. So our partner in this case, you know, their roots is in ship management. And of course, you know, they give the expertise so that they can be involved in ship owning as well. So I think there are situations like this, you know, that would drive us, you know, together. Maybe I'm just, you know, giving one example, you know, of how the world has changed and how important it is, you know, to have, operating expertise on our side that would drive, you know, capital even closer to the operating part.
Thank you, Candice. And you mentioned about the JV with Seacon. It's actually on the news. We also hear that, and we have a limited time left. Maybe we can explore that later. But Stephen, please.
Well, I think in this room we got a lot of talents, you know, a lot of wisdoms in this room. So regarding, you know, success factors, for me, I think the first thing is it should be the awareness. Awareness of risk. Well, if you look at the freight market, yeah, it's unusually high. This morning, I think Wang Yongxing, you know, as a keynote speaker, mentioned how to overcome the cycle. If the theory of a cycle is really stands firm, then we see if all these unusual conditions, for example, the war, conflicts, disappear sometime or suddenly, the cycle will tell us it's going to be deep down, the whole market will dip down, you know, to the bottom. Then we are talking about sustainability a lot today. Maybe in a few years' time, we are talking about survival. So that's a shipping business. Well, that's why we should be mindful of this risk and a cycle issue. And also some black swan, you know, also some, you know, unusual factors which is affect the markets and freight. And now we are sitting here talking about the sustainability. Actually, we may have the survival issue in the future. So That's the first thing. The other thing is, of course, we need to ride the train, right? Because there's a lot of restrictive policies. There's, of course, a kind of a moral, pressure, how to improve the environment, right, for the humankind, something. So we need to go for decarbonization. Therein, we need to also apply to the technology, something. So if the shipping companies, when you're focusing, traditional ships assets, we need to also think about some applied new technology, also environmental friendly technology to be applied to the new buildings. So this is also another critical factor. The other thing is, one thing is in tandem with what's happening, in geopolitical, tensions, whether we need to diversify our shipping assets to among the region, maybe if all the vessels go, supposed to be globalized, would you go into consider, regionalization of certain assets in the portfolio? Maybe you can think about from Asia Pacific or the Middle East, or just short to Europe, or across, Pacific Oceans. So you have a lot of choices. But anyway, you need to diversify your assets geographically. Meanwhile, you need also diversify your assets in the currencies, denomination. I would say, it would be wise, but it's a panic. It can be very agony, to diversify, U.S. dollar denoted assets to other currencies for a time, because anyway, U.S. dollar is still very strong. But you may make some choices, short term, medium term, long term. So I think that would be the some critical factors we strategically.
Thank you, Stephen. Pankaj?
Yeah, I think we are sitting in the warm glow of 5 years of amazing markets, right? Since COVID, containers have had a run for 5 years. Dry bulk has had an amazing run. Tankers have made amazing amount of money for the last 3 years. And we are about to enter a period where volatility is going to be very, very high. We are in the middle of two wars. It seems like nothing's happening over here, but we have two wars ongoing. We have President-elect Trump coming in. And the volatility in the tanker markets is going to go through the roof in the next couple of months. We can already see volatility in dry cargo. And if the Red Sea opens up, I can see a huge drop off in the container markets coming as well. So this also obviously offers opportunity. If you have deep pockets, it's going to be a good time to start buying assets. We've already seen a 20% drop off in bulk carrier values in certain segments. We are starting to see a drop off in tanker values, but of course it also comes with challenges. So I think we go back to the basics. The people who have deep pockets, who have made a lot of money, who have been wise in their investments, have not overextended themselves, have financed their new buildings, will be able to use this time to grow their companies and expand further. People who have extended themselves too much, have too much leverage at high values, will get into trouble again. It's surprising how we go through every cycle where everybody thinks that markets can never go up. And when we are in the up cycle, they think markets will never go down. Both things happen periodically. And I think we will start to see more of that happening very, very soon.
Yes, I think it's very interesting. I think timing has always been... people talk about timing a lot, but it's actually very difficult to grasp the exact right timing. And then I think I want to maybe ask each of you one more question. Maybe Candice, because you mentioned the cooperation with Seacon, there's actually a high profile transaction in the market. Everybody hear about it. Can you maybe share some of the experience you get in this transaction and basically how this strategic alliance, what do you see the future of this strategic alliance?
Well, on that point, I think I touched upon it a bit that, that they are in shipping because starting the route, in the ship management. And we are in shipping because we believe that we can provide efficient capital and bind all the resources together. Mm-hmm. Because of all the challenges that that we have in terms of driving businesses, in terms of getting the right capital, doing the right deals at the right time. We just need more parties, you know, to work together to understand, you know, what's going on. And also echoing, you know, what has just been discussed. Going back to fundamentals, shipping market, we would always from time to time have our good times because of disruption, because of various factors. But it has always been oversupply that would drive the market down. That oversupply situation, I started shipping 30-odd years ago, and the oversupply situation has persisted until 2008, you know, when we started, you know, to have the correction, and it has taken like almost a dozen years to realize that, you know, the excess, you know, capacity, you know, has been absorbed. 2-3 years ago, we have like the historically low order book. And now the older order book, you know, look still low, but not that low anymore. And thanks to ESG, people still cannot build, you know, a lot of ships at the moment because those decisions are very difficult to make. But mark my words, one day when we see the right few, people will rush into doing it. So I think I would just go back to fundamental is we have, you know, in this changing world, I mean, geopolitics, there will always be geopolitics, you know, and there will always be new regulations. To be able to do the right deals at the right time, we have to be flexible. And in this world, we have to combine our resources, our expertise together to make sure that we make the right decisions. Make the world smaller and let's work together.
I see. It's very important to get the right partner on the right project. And Stephen, maybe you can share with us, perhaps for your organization, what are the recent opportunities that you are pursuing, and what do you see, how those opportunities fit with the trend, as we discussed just now?
Well, actually, Equator Fund is still very young. You know, we have this, we start to manage this industry policy funds 2 years ago, so we are still on the stage of fundraise. I mean, simultaneously we are investing. So, of course, there are certain doctrines actually we follow. You know, something, you know, as I say, you know, we see an opportunity of new energy. You know, so the carriers, also some bunkering. You know, for clean and green energies like methanol or ammonia, something. So we see to the future. Meanwhile, you know, we are also focusing on the certain, you know, attention on passenger carriers, like cruisers, also some, you know, electricity powered, you know, passenger vessels, you know, short distance, that kind of things. So to us, you know, we think, you know, in China actually is revitalizing quickly, and we know, you know, for cargo traveling, definitely an oversupply situation. You know, if you see the order book, you know, Clarkson just issued, you know, a couple of months ago, you know, it's crazy. You know, it's if I can remember, it's for the first 9 months, you know, this year, and the total new order book already surpassed, you know, the total amount of the last two couple of years combined. So it's crazy. It's crazy. We smell something. Do you smell something, you know, similar, but it's going wrong. I understand still a lot of people are enthusiastic about the market and freight, but we need to be very careful. That's why from China's point of view, we see the cargo traveling, cargo, you know, vessels is really developed. But, you know, passenger vessels, we still think a lot of room to develop. So that's why the passenger vessels we will be very concerned about, you know, and also pay much attention to. What else? Also we are looking to sign, you know, offshore platform. As we see, we are going to have you know, one of the largest, you know, offshore platform for wings installment, that kind of vessel. So it's going to be ready, you know, mid next year. So I think that would be, you know, some opportunities we're looking at. Of course, you know, I think, you know, we're luckily, you know, located in Shenzhen. So around us, there are a lot of these new innovators, you know, something. We are also looking to some, you know, new technology, you know, incubator, you know, incubating them, you know, and for, you know, shipping assets purpose. So basically, we have four basic lines of focuses for the time being. Yeah.
Thank you. Pankaj, very quickly, because you mentioned that M&A actually plays an important role in your growth. Mm-hmm. Could you maybe share just challenges that you overcome in the M&A projects that you have done and that you manage?
Yeah, I mean, through my career, I've done a couple of different deals on M&A. The main thing around M&A is integration. So you have to be very clear in your purpose of acquiring a company. It's very easy to acquire assets. It's very difficult to acquire organizations. And then to turn those organizations to useful, productive, synergistic acquisitions. So the main time that you spend after acquisitions should be on integration and making sure that you repurpose the organization to doing what you needed it to do. So that's where I've spent my time most of this year. I've been coming to Hong Kong 3, 4, 5 times now to make sure that the organization is headed in the right direction. So I think integration is a key issue for M&A.
Great. Thank you. And I hope, as Kenneth mentioned, we actually have a lot of professional resources to support projects like a joint venture M&A in Hong Kong. And hopefully, it will also contribute to our success. Okay. I see the clock is already, we use up all the time. Thanks a lot for all the panelists for the very insightful discussion. Thank you.